Welcome along to another episode of We Are Liverpool. Last time out, Trent Alexander-Arnold kicked off season two with a fascinating chat about his thought process on the pitch, his attitude coming into the new season as vice-captain, and the game in which he felt closest to perfection. It's a must listen, and you can catch up straight after today's show if you like. As for today, we've got another local lad joining Jan Molby and myself, someone who lived the dream of scoring goals in front of the Kop with his hero's number on the back of his shirt.
I had this gift of scoring goals. Whenever I scored one or two in the game, I'd be going like hell to get the third.
You get strikers who are faint to shoot.
You never did any of that, did you? If you get there and they come out and you hit it, bang, they've got no chance. I got to know the morning that we played Man City. He said, Gavin wants to see you. The club's accepted an offer from you. And he said, I think you like it. That was my last game.
Yeah, and you scored twice, didn't you? And
we won two.
Yeah, I remember just like, oh yeah, of course, why wouldn't you score twice?
That's right, one of the finest strikers to wear the red jersey, John Aldridge, is with us today. And before we find out about his life and career, including his new hobby, which you won't have guessed, we just want to remind you that if you're not already, give us a follow wherever you get your podcast to make sure you don't miss any episodes this season, and we'll have plenty more big names joining us. Right now, though, it's time to hear from Aldo. Enjoy the show. John Aldridge, great to see you.
As always, Pete, and my old mate here,
Yeah. Al
Mucker.
It's been interesting spending some time with both of you, just as you've been having a cup of tea next door at the training ground here, and various ways you keep fit now. Jan's into the cycling. You're into the paddle tennis at the minute, which is something the manager loves.
Well, there's nothing in Liverpool that does paddle tennis. You know, it's either tennis or squash. And everyone knows I've got a place in Portugal, and I love it there. And where I am in Luz and Lagos, where there's paddle court tennises everywhere. So I've got into it over the last year. It's unbelievable. It's addictive, and I love it. I absolutely love it. Outside court, the sun's there. You get a sweat on. You know, you keep yourself fit. Saves you having to go to the gym.
Are you any good?
At the start, I was. You know, you struggle to get your eye in, but I'm getting there. I'm
don't
doing
tell
okay.
Me it's not important, John. We need to win, don't we?
Absolutely.
I was going to ask you that because
I hate losing, but
we need to win. Yes,
it is.
It's a great game. Only because you won.
Yeah. You're in it to win it, aren't you?
You've got to win at everything. Say you play the kids in the garden, the grandkids in the garden. Have you got to beat them still now?
Yeah. Well, you give them chances, don't you? You know what I mean? Like, oh, Joe, I go and go with ours, Joe, and if he scores, it's a pound. If I save it, he owes me a pound, and then it doubles up. So I got him once at £32 he owed me. Oh, you should have seen his face. I had to let it go in the last one because I thought he was going to get up and cry. But it's good fun.
Don't give John Aldridge a chance, though, Jan.
No.
Anywhere around that penalty area.
It's in the back of the net, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's been a while since both of us played, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, people probably can't quite remember how we played. So they just... John Aldridge, it's just goals, isn't it? You know, people would go, John Aldridge, goals, isn't it?
Yeah. No, Jan's right. I didn't really want to get involved, you know, halfway line or you know, I was a box man. Nowadays, we played more long balls. Get into the chest, get in front of the centre halves or whatever, fullback, get the ball down, hold it. Then you're looking at Jan or Macca or Ronnie, and then you've got Barnsley, Peter or Ray over there. I give it to one of them. You can't look at the quality there. And then I just spin off to the back post, knowing that the defenders don't know where I am. And I'm going to run across them or wait and see where the ball comes in or get threaded through. And you know, you make your runs. Haaland does it now. Exactly the same, doesn't want to get involved. If he does, it's one touch, two touch maximum in the box. And then you do what you're good at in there, you know.
Yeah, he's also a back stick man, isn't he?
Yeah, big time.
I mean, not every goal scorer is necessarily a back post man, are they?
Yeah.
But he is, and you were.
Yeah. See, Rush used to get involved quite a bit outside the box.
Yeah.
Even Robbie did. But I had so much quality there. I don't want to get involved there when I've got the five of the six best players on the planet. I'll just pull all the defence apart and move them where they don't want to go. Mm. And if I don't get the ball or I don't score, I'll get the space for one of the other lads to get into and do the damage.
Yeah, give us an insight on that, because some players would, maybe as a midfield player, you've got to have a lot of touches in the game to feel like you've played well. Whereas as a goal scorer, if you have six touches in the first half and score a goal, you're happy with that?
Absolutely. 1,000,000%. Like, I was told by... That was great advice when I was playing for Newport County, Len Ashurst. He knew I was desperate to play for Liverpool one day. And he pulled me when I started scoring for them. He said, if you want to play for Liverpool, you have to score one goal in every two games, every season you play, at least. So whenever I scored one or two in the game, I'd be going like hell to get the third because it gives me a respite.
For the next one, yeah. You're one ahead.
Yeah, I'm one ahead. So, and then invariably, it worked in my favour. It's great advice.
So this we're talking about now, John, is Newport, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is obviously interesting. You're playing in the fourth division and you're talking about joining Liverpool.
Yeah.
That's ambitious, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I always, like, from a kid when I first seen Roger Owens, I always supported the club and I always wanted to be on the cup and the boys' pen and whatever, but I always wanted to replicate him. Yeah. I set the seed early in my life. So I thought, well, you reach for the stars. And I knew somewhere I had this gift of scoring goals. Yeah, yeah. You know, like I used to play and used to score like 8 in some games, 6 or maybe 9 or 10 in one game. You know, I knew that I had it, so I had to just work on it.
But it's big pressure, John, isn't it? Because there's only one thing that takes you back to Anfield, and that's goals.
Yeah.
So if you're a different type of player, you're not just as hasty, are you? So I was never a goal scorer. You can go, okay, Jan's playing quite well, isn't it? But you're telling me now, and I believe that the only thing that takes you back to Anfield is goals, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you need to score the goals at Newport.
Absolutely.
Then you get your big move. Are you then disappointed that you go from Newport to Oxford, who I believe was in the third division, but just about to get promoted?
Yeah.
Are you disappointed with that?
Well, Sunderland came in for me. Len Ashes had moved to Sunderland. It was a bigger club. We know that. And Sunderland were just on the slide. But they couldn't afford 80 grand, whatever it was for me. They couldn't afford it. So Robert Maxwell, obviously he's very powerful. He had the wealth, he had the money. So he gave me a really good wage and I thought, and Jim Smith was there. Jim's brilliant. He just said, look, the way we play, it's going to suit you. If they score 3 goals, we're going to score 4. That's what we play. 2 flying wingers. I'm going to get someone up front with you, pick Billy Hamilton. And I'm Bob's your uncle. And it worked out because they were on the verge at the time of going up. So I'd gone up with Newport County from Division 4. And we won the Welsh Cup and done really well in the European Cup Winners' Cup, if you remember. That was brilliant 5 years. That was like an apprenticeship. So you go from there. I knew Oxford were going to go up because they had a really good side. So I went there and helped see them up. And then the following year, he went Billy Hamilton in and got like Ray came in. And we strolled the second division and got to the top. Brilliant times. It was absolutely fantastic team.
So when do you then become Irish? When do you get involved?
Well, I always knew my Irish roots. And like when I joined Oxford, Dave Langan, our fullback, we used to talk about Ireland. And then Ray joined, and because I'd always followed Ireland and England when I was young. I did. And obviously, we used to talk. He said, you can qualify for Ireland. I said, yeah, I think so. And I don't know who told Jack Charlton about it, but he came to watch us play against Aston Villa in the semi-final of the Mill Cup. So the first leg was at Villa Park, and we drew 2-2. And I knew Jack was watching, and I scored 2. And I'm in the lounge afterwards, and all of a sudden, the door bursts to, and there comes Jack with his cap on, big coat. Comes running over to me, marching over to me. John, well played. Great 2 goals. I said, thanks, Mr. Charlton. He said, you know, I'm the new Republic of Ireland manager. I said, yeah, of course. He said, would you like to play for me? I said, I'd love to play for you, Mr. Charlton. I'd be honoured to play for the Republic of Ireland. He went, shake me hand. So I shook his hand. He said, we'll get the accreditation passed in the next 6 weeks and you'll play against Wales at Lansdowne Road in my first game. I said, thank you, Mr. Charlton. And then I told him about Ray, standing over there, and he went, oh, he played well. He just like custard pie me.
He pointed at Ray and he went, that's Scottish fellow over there. He wouldn't mind playing for Ireland.
Exactly.
So how many goals in your first season in top flight?
I think League and Cup, it would have been about 23.
And then the magic happens.
Yeah.
Phone call.
Yeah. Second season in top flight, yeah. Everyone knew Rushy was leaving.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, it's widely known, going to Juventus. So when I'd seen Rushy was leaving, I'm sure I'd have been gutted because thinking, oh, how are they going to replace him? But then I'm thinking, you never know.
No, that's fair enough. I remember pulling my hair out because you're thinking, I think he scored 34 goals in the double in the season. You're thinking, how do we replace these goals, you know?
Yeah, no, spot on.
But we did, didn't we?
Well, I got to know the morning that we were playing Man City at Main Road, a strange one, like 10:30 in the morning. Room with Bobby McDonald, he said, the gaffer wants to see you. Strange. he said, the club has accepted an offer from you. And I'm thinking, can't tell me, this is 4 hours before we play. I'm thinking, I hope it's not Arsenal, because I've been linked to Arsenal in the papers. And he said, I think you'll like it. And there'd been a couple of mutterings because Rushy's gone. I was very likened to Rushy. And then I thought, it's Liverpool. And he went, yeah. I thought I was still in bed, dreaming, you know. I started to, like, pinch myself a little bit, you know, is this really true? So, yeah, and then he had to go out and play. I was garbage. I couldn't hit the ball straight. I didn't want to get injured.
Surely you scored, no?
No, you're joking.
A game you didn't score in?
I normally used to score against Man City as well all the time. But no, I didn't. It threw me. It threw me because, you know, in the back of your mind, if you, it was like yourself, you're thinking, 50-50 ball here. I'm not going for that one. You know what I mean? I want to keep these legs straight till I sign for Liverpool.
It's funny you're talking there. You're playing in the top flight as well. You've still got this adoration for Liverpool. Obviously, this move comes off. But what's it like walking into that dressing room of these players that you played against a couple of times, but in the background, they're still your heroes, aren't they?
I wasn't daunted about taking over Ian, because I knew I was scoring 20 to 25 goals for Oxford. And I knew with these players around me, it'd follow suit. So that wasn't a problem, or carrying the number 8 jersey. People said, "Did you want the I didn't want the number 9 jersey. I always wanted the number 8 jersey because of Roger. But my problem was, as soon as going to that dressing room and meeting the lads, I was terrified. I really was. And I'm a confident person, as you know. And I'm thinking, going in there, my heart was pounding and everything. I've got to mix with them. You know, and straight away as you go in there, you've got Jocky Hansen taking the mickey out of you. You know, the lads are... I knew some of the lads, and I've talked to some of the lads, obviously in the Irish part of the lads. But it took me a little bit of time just to adapt to the dressing room.
What can you remember about that, Jan, and walking in?
I have to be honest, in I think the early few early years when I was at Liverpool, I wasn't as much up on the other clubs as maybe I should have been. So even when we signed Steve McMahon, it was a bit like, yeah, okay, I sort of remember him. And even the same when we signed John, I remember playing against you at Oxford or whatever. But then when you see the story in the Liverpool Echo, you know, local lad and whatever. And I remember John coming in, and he was a sort of a typical confident scouser who knew what we were just about to ask him to do, that he could do, which was to score goals. And but when we talk about that, John, it's like, this now becomes really personal, doesn't it? Because now you're going to play for your club.
Yeah.
And I'm also thinking in terms of your friends and families, isn't it? Was that where you felt the biggest pressure?
No. I always knew I would score goals.
Yeah.
I knew it. We weren't really going anywhere at the time as a team. I think we were both four.
There was a lull. There was a lull in the season, wasn't it? Everton won the league.
Absolutely. And then we played Southampton. Wasn't a great game, you know. And then with about 20 minutes to go, we had a free kick down about 30 yards out towards the Kenilworth Road stands there into Danny Road. And Jan's... He could put a ball on the Tanner from 50 yards, Jan. It's ridiculous. I peel off the back post and he flights this ball. I'd say about, 12, 14 yards out. Shilton's there and I've just powered it, like we were taught to, across the face of the goal. And it's gone in off the far post. So it's a really good, well-worked free kick. It's great to score against Peter Shilton, because I still love Ray Clements, because he should have played more England games than Shilton should. And that scored me 1-1-0. And I always remember after that, Jan, because I just joined Liverpool and it hadn't sunk in. I was still a dreaming type of thing. But when I scored that goal, I went nuts at the Anfield Road end. Then you come out the euphoria, and then you remember you've got to run back to the halfway line. So I'm running back to the halfway line facing the cop. And Bruce is in goal there, and seeing the crossbar there, and looked above the crossbar where the barrier was. I went to every home game, no, my mates who I went with were still there watching me score. And that was the moment that I knew I wasn't dreaming. And the cops singing my name, it was just a magical moment in my life, you know.
Funny that you should score your first goal for Liverpool with your head, because you had a great head of a ball. I thought you were very deliberate.
Yes.
In placing with
absolutely
with
headers. Even when like the glances, when you round, you win it, you know, you've got a 360.
It's a bit of that knowledge, isn't it? Where can't the goalkeeper save the ball, isn't it? You know.
Where I lived in Garston, I used to have a ball. My record of keeping the ball up in the air was like 385 or something. It's ridiculous, because I used to do it every day. So it's doddle. So that's where I got like the vision and you know, the practice of heading. And we're only doing heavy balls. It wasn't Casey balls. It was just like the plastic balls you used to get. So that in itself helped me work out, you know, your directions, like a computer, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that helped me an awful lot. I loved having the ball. A lot of people don't like heading the ball now, but I loved it, you know.
As a midfield player as well, having that target, someone that could head a ball that way, must have been.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because we obviously never had what the other teams had in terms of a 6'3", 6'4" target man we could go to. We played in a different way in it, but of course set pieces, there's only one thing you can basically do with set pieces, and is put them in the box, isn't it?
Yeah.
And what you often find with centre halves who go for set piece and you go, it's pointless because they don't even look like they want to score a goal, isn't it? But then you got somebody like John who really relishes that. You know, and most centre halves would tower over you, wouldn't they?
Yeah, yeah.
But it was all about timing, wasn't it?
It's a good shout that, Jan. I think it's having the willingness and really wanting to attack the ball.
Absolutely.
And unfortunately, it was one of my ideal tricks. I probably scored a third of my goals with my head. You get across defenders, you try and nick it, and you just got to. Nunes does that now.
Yeah.
That's what I love about Nunes. Many strikers now, when you go to head the ball, they're like, accept they're not going to head the ball. His blood vessels are burst out his neck just to get a little nick on. It's a big part of the game. That little flick makes an opportunity for someone to get a goal, really wanting to head the ball, innit?
Now, what did you end up with over 400 goals, did you?
The league goals, I should know, it's 350 or whatever, something like that. But it's not all top flight, it's the 42nd first.
But a goal's a goal, isn't it, John?
Yeah. So at the moment, I'm the top living player with league goals, English league goals.
Okay,
unfortunately, the other five who were ahead of me have passed on, and they were great goals, like the great Dixie Dean, there's so many. Jimmy Greaves, fantastic player. But that's an honour in itself. And Jimmy Greaves always said, mine was always in the top flight, although, you know, which is fair play to him. But I did beat, and I was able to do this because I was a player manager. I love beating records and goal scoring. And Jimmy Greaves had the most career goals, 468. That's goals England, you know, he even played abroad, didn't he? And then at the top flight with Tottenham and whatever, West Ham and whatever. So when I was player manager, I thought, I'm going to beat him.
Mm.
So I kept myself going.
Nobody's
going
to stop me.
It's a bit selfish, but he had to do it.
You had a strike after all,
so you are selfish. With I had 474, and some quarters give me 476 career goals, which is a record. You know, some records don't include me goals in Spain, you know, with Real Sociedad and whatever. But I know I've got it. And my family know I've done it, and I'm really proud of that. The teams I play for and the players who made them goals for me, I've had massive.
It's always the one thing that survives time is goals, isn't it? People always talk about goals. But what I
just
want
on
to
that know, point he was making there, though, Jan, just to clear up. So when he was player manager, he broke the record. You were 38, didn't you? Is that right? Did you get that 30, last goal?
30, I might have been 39.
39.
I remember. I was listening on the radio. I was somewhere, and you were playing Wolves, I think.
That was my last game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're thinking this is now his last game. And you scored twice, didn't you? And
we won two.
I remember she was like, oh yeah, of course, why wouldn't you score twice? But the one thing I wanted, when I said before, do you have any idea how many of your goals would be one-touch finishes?
Wow, most. Oh yeah, most.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I know exactly. Because
I'm
thinking, like, you know, you get strikers who are clean on goal and they feint to shoot, don't they? Come back inside and whatever. You never did any of that, did you?
No, I used to go round. I used to like, if the goalies come out the box, I used to like going round the keepers and sliding them in.
But I just think, I see so many, it's like, you know, back post, help it over the line with the head, isn't it?
Whenever a player goes through on goal, and they should wear, you can work on this. When the goalie comes out, if you take a touch, he's going to get you more often than not where he wants you to get you. He's giving him a chance. But if you get there and they come out and you hit it, bang, no chance unless it hits the legs. They've got no chance. All you have to do is, obviously, you've got to guide it into corners, but they're out of the game. If you do it instinctively like that, the goalie's got no chance. But if you take a touch and then...
Yeah, because it takes it so early.
If you take it early, you can be Alisson, you can be Ray Clemens, God bless his soul. But they've got no chance unless it hits his foot. So I've done that an awful lot of chance, quite rarely.
Is that the difference between a midfield player and a striker in that position? Probably. The midfield player would always take an extra touch, whereas...
And also, I think also when you're not used to, you kind of want it to be perfect, isn't it? You want the ball to be exactly where you want it to be before you hit that shot. Whereas what John is saying, the importance of him is much more surprise element
yes.
for the goalkeeper before he gets himself set, because you know when you see a goalkeeper, you know when he's set and ready.
Surprises, that's the one.
You know,
or you can manipulate. If you don't take it, then you've got to manipulate a position to do it. Or what Kenny did, and a lot of Liverpool players used to do it, and didn't get onto it when I played for Liverpool. He used to say sometimes if it's close here, like I was at the Bruges final when he'd done the dink,
yeah,
when we won the European Cup at Wembley, like he said dink it, and I went, do you know what? That's one thing I never used to do.
Yeah, yeah.
I used to do like bang.
But you
bang,
did
bang.
Dink one, didn't you?
Yeah, I think. Right. I got to do it a couple of times, yeah, so yeah, it's good.
But the Forest one was the famous
the
dink.
The Forest one, yeah. Little dink when
Because I'm thinking out. As he's running through, this is not like Aldo. Why hasn't he shot?
Yeah. I knew.
Normally he goes down the side of the goalkeeper. What's he doing?
Beardsley. Oh, he seems to be able to find space and find Aldridge. And that is another superb Liverpool goal. Beardsley in his own half here hits the ball, what, 30 yards into the path of Aldridge, who just jogs it past the keeper to make it 2-0.
It's the 5-0 game.
Yeah,
but know what happened? He didn't allow me to go round him. And you've got to see it earlier. And I thought, well, I can't go round him because it's going to be this is like the computer going round in your head. So I've got to think it now. But it's great advice. I had a striker's brain, you know, thankfully. Otherwise, I wouldn't be sitting here now. But I was gifted with this striker's brain that I could see things early, you know, in front of goal. And then, you know, all right, you fluffed your line sometimes, but like, thankfully, not an awful lot, you know.
Just a quick break in today's show to let you know that the LFC Store app is the best place to go for exclusive merchandise, for gifts, and the latest selection of playing and training wear. You'll be the first to know about new products, and there are exclusive offers and discounts on a regular basis for all of our app users. Head over to your app store now, download the app, and see what's on offer today. Now, let's get back to the show.
It's funny, you know, when John Aldridge was walking into the place today, there was a little bit of neuro analysis going on the pitch outside, you know, where they strap a helmet onto players and try and figure out why they make certain decisions on which way to go in the penalties.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, little do they know that we've got two of Liverpool's greatest ever penalty takers sat in a room upstairs. And you know, there's such an art to taking a penalty,
now.
Penalties look a little bit similar to the way you used to take them now, a lot of top-flight players.
I think it's slightly easier now because they know, or actually they've got to have the mindset, and Jan mightn't agree with me, but the goalies have to stay in the line now. Like Jan's penalty, just if you hit them low and hard, they can't get them. They just can't get them because they shouldn't get them. But obviously it's having the mindset, and Jan was ridiculous, and I had the confidence as well to add it to my game.
But you know when you talk about the tests that they do, that's suggesting that it's not a physical exercise, is it, taking a penalty? It's a psychological thing, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Did you take penalties at Newport and Oxford?
I got to Newport towards the end of my career there.
And would you have chucked them in the same manner you chucked them once you arrived at Anfield? In that calm, stuttering sort of...
No, I developed that over the years, you know... And
what makes you develop that, John? Because you wouldn't have been able to see anyone else doing it, would it?
No. I just always used to get me mad about the goalkeepers being able to move. See, I always placed man, like Jan placed his. Jan's would go hard and low in the corners, mostly. Most of them, wouldn't he? Really well placed. I used to try and pick the top right-hand corner. I think I scored three penalties. No, was it two? I've got a few against Peter Shilton, bring him up again because that was nice.
I also scored a few against Shilton.
It wasn't a great penalty take. But all of a sudden, and then I think it was after the Wimbledon game, I sort of developed because of the way Dave came out and done that. I thought, I've got to see that. I've got to see that more, better. And then the shimmy come involved. And I thought, I'll stamp my leg and then you can see what they go. But you've got to obviously hold your nerve and then see it last minute because you're looking at the ball, but you're not looking at the ball, you're looking at the keeper, aren't you? Yeah, you know, you're looking at both, you know. And then when he goes, shouldn't you start with your right foot? Before you kick it with your right foot, you send him. Then you've got to calm yourself down, get there, see in the corner you're at, and just roll it in the corner.
It sounds simple, but it's not.
No, it's not.
It's not.
No, it's not. And when you look at a penalty taker like John, so the listeners, the viewers, watch some of his penalties and you think you don't have time to do all these things that he says, but you do.
In one motion.
Yeah, but you do. you know, the game slows down and it's in your time. And but I think what we're trying to say is that we were in control of our penalties, yeah. weren't we? You never lost. So I think sometimes when you just go boom and hit a rebound, you can sort of lose a little bit of control, can't you? We never quite did that, did we?
No.
So when we're talking about penalties, there is one famous penalty in it, John.
Do we have to talk about this one?
There is Aldridge, Beardsley. Well, he might score here. Penalty. And here we have high drama because Aldridge, who I think might have been replaced a moment later, is the penalty taker. And never has a penalty been missed in the FA Cup final at Wembley. Besant thinks that, or thought the kick might go to his left or the right as we look if Aldridge decides to go the same way as in the semi-final. He did, and he saved it and made history.
I've got to talk about it because it's the only one I missed. I didn't get the elevation, no. But what Dave did, if you look at it, he was guessing I was going to go in that corner, so he took two steps and he spread himself out. And really, I should have like switched it in there, but I didn't. I went for the top, and I didn't get it quite the top. And he, it's a good save, you know. He saved it well. Do you know what? It decimated me. I felt I'd let the lads down, the fans down, everyone down.
You think Wembley and the occasion?
Yeah. Slightly got to me, Jan. It must have slightly got to me without me realising, because I was confident I was going to score.
Yeah.
Like every other penalty. And then the worst thing was, can he substitute me straight after? I had another 20 minutes to put that right, and I wasn't able to. That really hurt me more, I think. But yeah, it was a horrible moment, you know, and the fact that we lost, you know.
You take penalties, you step forward to take a penalty, that's the risk you run, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, but we loved it. But do you know what, Jan's here now. So the next season starts, and we started off after this. We got Man United at home, one of the first home games. And it's a tough game, because some really good players. And we got a penalty in the second half. My confidence wasn't there. I thought, imagine missing this one. And I give it to Jan, and he's just lost it.
But how do you get that back then? Because you see it quite a lot now. Someone will miss a penalty and another penalty taker will take over. How do you get that mojo back to have the confidence to do it again?
What happened next? We had a really off day. We got beaten in the League Cup against the West Ham away. I think we got beat 4-1, which was very unlike us. And we got a penalty, and I said, I'll take it. You know, and I scored easily. And that got me back on track. Mm. It was just a mental block. But the Man United thing, if they missed against Man United, it's even worse against Wimbledon.
You both talked about Wembley a lot, you know, that affinity for Wembley. Obviously, you get the penalty saved in the cup final against Wimbledon. You get the chance to put it right at Wembley again, arguably in a much bigger occasion.
Yeah, obviously it was the Hillsborough cup final one. It's really weird because my last kick, as I said before, was the penalty. 89's a year forward. Everton had kick-off. My first kick was virtually in the same place, and it went where the penalty should have gone, right in the top corner against the great Neville Southall. What a keeper he was, by the way. Yeah, it was great. It was great the fact that we, you know, we won it for the people. We won it for the people and the families, the 96 and the families, 97 now. There was a lot of pressure on us, more so in the semi-final.
Yeah, but in many ways, we were helpless, John, weren't we? All we could do was play the games and try and help in that way, isn't
absolutely.
It? And that was the message that we were getting through as we were meeting families at Anfield, and you kind of go, what can we do? And they're going, play your football.
And win it
for them. Do we have to do and win it for them, you know what I mean?
So absolutely, yeah.
It was like, people always go on about, and we'll come to that in a minute, the Arsenal. And them. A lot of people forget that we beat Everton in the cup final. We had two league games to go. It was almost like deflating a balloon after Wembley, because this is what it was about. This is what the season became about. Let's win the FA Cup final against Everton in 89.
It was almost like you had nothing left.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. It's like, I know that we then went on to beat West Ham 5-1, and possibly, if anything, more than the Michael Thomas goal, that West Ham goal was the one. Had we not given them a goal and beaten them 5-0, then Arsenal would have had to win by 3, wouldn't they? Yeah. You know, but John's a better man to talk about that.
Yeah, no, it was like Friday night. And Jan's quite right, you know. The gut feeling before the semi-final was the worst feeling I'd ever had before a game. At Old Trafford against Forest, the replay. I've never felt emotions or feeling that if we lost that game, it would have been horrendous. More so than the final. Getting the final, then The motivation was to win it for the people, which we did, and that's all we could do at that given time. And you look back now, people would have said, would you rather win the league or the FA Cup? You know, it's always the league. But that year, you have to say, you'd have to win the FA Cup because of what happened. And that's the only thing we could do after what we went through and the funerals and, you know, what we went to. Yeah, but I have to remember that feeling going out at Old Trafford was nothing short of horrendous in your stomach. You know, it was ridiculous. The thought of losing that game. Mm. And we won 3-1, yeah.
You know, that Arsenal game, so many things that are really clear in my mind. And obviously, because you watch replays back all these years later, you know, the clock in the corner, Steve McMahon with the sweat dripping off his nose with the one minute left hang on. How clear are your memories of the closing moment of that game and how close you came to winning the double?
Do you know what happened when Barnsley, you know, it's just got at the corner.
Who do you want to have the ball in the last minute in a game like that?
Johnny Barnes, no one. It was just tiredness of mind. Just, you know, what gone through in that week, everything, you know. But you know what happened then when it went to the goalkeeper? And if you look at this, Lukic got the ball and I'm in front of him and my arms go up like that.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, stop him throwing the ball because Barnes is not out there. You know what I mean? And I go up and something stopped me. I just go up, get the ball, get booked, and it's game over. And I'm thinking, whoa! Why didn't I do it? That was harder to take than the penalty miss because of what happened that year, obviously. You know, and if ever a team deserved to win the double, and I'm not just saying that, but that team, we deserved that for what happened that year and the way we came back, and it was just horrendous, you know. Credit to Arsenal, obviously, you've got to give them credit, but it was so hard to take.
So much of the stories that you've told is about emotion, isn't it? And the emotion of getting there in the first place, the love affair you had with Ireland as well, we've only really scratched over the surface of. But leaving Liverpool, is that still the most emotional you get when you look back on your time as a player?
Nothing can be ever as emotional as Hillsborough, for one. But from a football personal point of view, it took me years and years to get to where I wanted to be and to play for the club that I've always wanted to play. And I played a relatively short time, but I did what I know I could do. The last season I scored 31 goals in, I think it was 40 starts, something like that. Couldn't do no more. The writing was on the wall. Club sold me and I knew it was there that last game. But when obviously the final whistle was, and the cop didn't want me to go. I'm one of them. They want me to stay. The crowd want me to stay, but I've got to go. And yeah, it was that when I ran off the pitch, that was really emotional, yeah.
I have to say that night, you know, as you start to get yourself undressed, isn't it? You know, in front of the cop. And but you're looking at something and you're thinking, wow, this is an awkward divorce, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, great shout, yeah.
This is really awkward, isn't it? Because you've got a guy here now that the fans are desperate to stay, and then you got you who desperately don't want to leave.
Yeah.
And it's almost as if it almost looked to me as if you're thinking, I'm going to throw myself into the cop here so I don't have to go. I'll go back into where I belong because that's where you came from, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You came from the cupboards, and I'm thinking, you're thinking, I'll go back into all my mates and I won't have to go to
Spain.
You should have done.
Then left the dressing room and just got up.
Yeah, but
that's
almost like how I'm thinking, isn't it?
Because great shells.
But what I really want to know is, John, is like, Spain.
Yeah. I think John Toshak, obviously, was even though he's at Real Madrid, he's very heavily involved with Real Sociedad, and he loved the Basque area. And they wanted to change the policy from, obviously, all Basque. You know, I was the first non-Basque to play for them. So that
what was that like, John?
At first, I didn't really know because until I get there, you know, what it was all about. And then I realised the enormity of it by the press conference. And then I went to the training ground, there's graffiti there, and someone told me, it was saying, Aldridge, we don't want you. So 70-odd percent at the time, 75% didn't want me. And then I sunk home, I thought, ooh, this is a little bit bigger than what I thought, you know.
What a challenge this is.
Yeah, but look, the money they offered me and what I got, the one thing that could come off it was for my family, first and foremost, for my future, for their future. So I accepted it, and you know what? I didn't want to leave Liverpool, but I couldn't have gone to a better place.
Really?
Yeah, the Basque people are just tremendous.
How difficult was it to convince the family, though?
That's hard. You know Joan well, and the kids were only babies. They've just come to Liverpool from being at Newport and Oxford and settled in Liverpool, yeah. Our home. Got a place where our families are from. And then all of a sudden you got to uproot, go to Spain. And in them days, there was no easy jet at Ryanair where you can just jump on and go there. You got to go like Liverpool to Manchester or Manchester to Gatwick and Gatwick to Bilbao. It takes you nearly a day to get there. But, you know, Joan backed me and the kids went there. And after my first couple of goals against Barca, the crowd really took to me, you know, and I scored, a goal when we beat Real Madrid 2-1. Didn't like the central government, obviously, for political reasons. So once I scored them goals, like, whoa, you know, we got this lad in, isn't it? And I think I can honestly say, and you've seen me, I wear my heart on my sleeve on the pitch anyway. I leave nothing like you. I ran myself into the ground and put my head in where it hurts. And that's the way the Basques are in life. The lads, when I walked in the dressing room, we'd played them.
In a pre-season friendly.
That's right, yeah. And I had a little bit of a set too with the centre-half.
Not like you at all. Must have been his fault.
but do you know what? We became really good friends because he was just like me. He was full-blooded and all that. No, I was there on my own the first few weeks, living in a hotel and all that. But hey, it was on the seafront, and they've got the Concha and La Playa beaches there. The best food, the best cuisine in the world for donkey's years, you know, this place.
This is probably quite an unfair question, this, but would you, given your time again, have still gone there or swap your experience at Real Sociedad to have stayed at Liverpool and fought for your place?
Oh, I didn't want to lose Liverpool. I'd have fought my place. The season before when Rushy came back, Ian, we had three players, me, Peter and Ian, fighting for two places. And I'm always up for a fight. And I scored 31 goals, as I said before, that season. I couldn't do no more in a three-way fight for two. And I was very confident to do the same again, whether I play with Ian. And we could play together, by the way, regardless of what people say. Peter could play with Ian. So in the modern game, that would be perfect.
Yeah, it would be, yeah.
But in that game, you had to play. You know, but Kenny said to me, look, you're going to have basically splinters in your backside. We used to say, I'm not going to be playing you. So it's in your best interest to go to Real Sociedad.
So if you look back at your career, John, and go, I wish I hadn't gone to Sociedad, not because it's whatever, or do you look back and go, do you know what? It enhanced my type as a footballer and my time as a person. Yeah. Do you look back as a really positive experience?
And I got to learn to speak a language, which I hated school, but I love speaking Spanish, you know, and learning bits of Basque. I really enjoyed it. And you know what? You should never have any regrets, but because of Joan, and she loved it, but she really couldn't settle because of family. I had to, because she showed me last season.
Say, you come back a little bit.
I came back, you know.
You probably planned,
I'd love to have played my last year of my contract there. Because if your family comes first, it's got to come first, and that's the reason why I came back. I'd settled, the lads were great, the place was great, I got used to everything, all about it. I just wish I could have given them the last season, but your family comes first, doesn't it?
I don't know if you can answer this, John, or not, but how are you viewed? I mean, Real Sociedad, John Aldridge turns up there, big name, big hero still.
I went back there some years ago, yeah, I think about 5 or 6 years ago. I went on the pitch at half-time and no one left the seats where they go for a coffee or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And
it was staying because Aldo was back.
You know, I'm not emotional person, but it touched the nerves.
It's not your own, is it? It's not your own people, so they take a bit of convincing, don't they?
Yeah, I can imagine. I'm very proud when I look back, you know, that I got there and, you know, they didn't want me. And turned them when I was leaving. The stadium was bouncing and rocking for me. They were pleading me to stay. But Trigueno just beat me by two goals from the Pichichi, which is the golden boot out there.
He was okay though when he put it.
Oh, what a player. And Sanchez, remember him? They had some great players. Yeah. But I just scored my eighth goal against Barcelona in six games, you know, at the Camp Nou. And I know Howard Wilkinson was watching that game.
Was he at Leeds then?
And I actually thought, Leeds, big club. Yeah. I thought, I'd have a bit of that. And he's seen us beat Barcelona 3-1 and let my last away game. I scored two. I thought, it's got to be on. And the club wanted 400 grand
from me, but he didn't come in for me. For really? Some reason, no, I don't know. I don't know what that was all about. But would have gone to Leeds, 100%.
So in the end, it's Tranmere. I mean, but then, is it Johnny King? Is it
Johnny King?
Peter Johnson, the owner by then?
Yeah, 250.
Yeah, I was going to say that was quarter of a million, wasn't it?
And to be fair, it wasn't the money that Playboy, they probably wanted. They wanted 400, but 250. And they phoned me up and they said, look, you've got to come back. And I said, I have my family. I have to come for it. You have to take it. You know, and we had a good conversation with them, like, and they were very good. They were great about it. And then spoke to Tranmere, wages very low compared to us. It was just very low. But I've never been
play, a one. Play for the love of the game, John. Play for the love of the game.
Absolutely, Jan. And that's and for me, the family to be home, that meant more to me than any wage pack. So yeah, got the wage and, you know, got various things which helped them tick along, and I loved it.
And then you become a manager, player manager. What is your favourite game as a player manager, manager for Tranmere?
There's two that spring to mind. Well, there's more than two probably, but I think the ones that would probably come to mind is the Everton game away in the FA Cup fourth round, 3-0 beating them at Goodison Park. Wow. Wow, that we were just so good. Yeah. I set the lads up so well, and young Jason Kumas was amazing that day, and it just clicked 3-0, and we missed the chance to make it 4-0. Ian, you missed the sitter last minute. And the Southampton game gave me a lot of... Because we were playing Liverpool in the quarter-final, and then we're 3-0 down. We'd already be drew out against Liverpool. If you remember, we drew with Southampton 0-0 at the Den. The Dell, sorry.
You already knew, yeah.
And then the quarterfinals was picked out on a Sunday when I'm out with the pub with all my mates, and the FA Cup draw comes out, and I'm in Walton with my mates in the pub, and all comes on and everyone's all jumping all over me, all Liverpool fans and the Everton fans, and you've got to beat them and all. Anyway, playing Southampton at home, the replay, half time 3-0 down. I remember Sheed saying to me, look at Glenn Hoddle in the sidekick. They're giving it high fives and they're giving it like that
in the tunnel.
When he scored the third goal, and I'm going, I'm looking forward to beating them and playing Liverpool at home. Tranmere in the quarter final of the FA Cup. Anyway, I get in and my team talk was the tea went everywhere. The tea went, the friggin' scored at the lads and done the suits and everything. But I picked, know what I did for the first time? I picked on the elder statesmen of the, not the younger ones in the team. And I said, basically, in layman's terms, I said, there's billions of people watching you making an absolute show of yourself. You're letting them lads down, them young lads down, not doing your job down like that. You've got Liverpool, the quarterfinals here, Merseyside rocking, and you're getting beat 3-0 by an ordinary team like them. Glenn Hoddle's giving the high fives with his mate, making us look like stupid on the sideline. And I've gone into... Next minute, 3-1, 3-2, 3-3. Stewie gets one and Paul Ryder, they'll get that three. We win 4-3. It's amazing. It's nuts. You know, it just that one always comes to mind. But then obviously when we got to Wembley, actually walking them out, Jan, at Wembley.
Yeah, I can imagine that's a big thing.
Against
Leicester.
Even though we got beat, I'm walking out there and there's 30,000 Tranmere fans there. A lot of Liverpool and Everton fans amongst them, obviously. That was my proudest moment as a manager, I have to say. It really, you know, I was thinking about my alpha and things are going out of motions, you know, you're walking as a manager at Wembley in a big cup final. That was, even though we got beat, it was lovely for the club.
Although we like to finish the show with a couple of questions that we maybe couldn't fit into your timeline.
Okay.
First one, if you go back and score one goal from your career, which one would you pick out of the hundreds and hundreds you scored?
I think it would be the second goal in the Hillsborough semi-final against Nottingham Forest when it made the 2-1. Brian Law scored the third own goal, and I'd done something really uncharacteristically. I rubbed my mind. I meant to say sorry, but I knew we'd won the game. It's 3-1, and it looked so poor from me, and I apologised to him afterwards. But that game was the biggest one. You didn't need to win a cup or a league or any sort of medal. Winning that game was more than anything. What you got in life meant more than anything.
Is there a goal from Liverpool's history that you didn't score that you wish you had? You'd seen every goal nearly as a fan. A goal that you didn't score that you wish you had?
God, what great questions. Probably, yeah. I think the Brews game at Wembley, they defended so well. I'm thinking, this is getting a bit smelly, this. We could get beat. And then, you know, that's great pass by Souness and the dink by Kenny. Yeah, probably that one, yeah, because it won us the European Cup 1-0, didn't it?
Little dink, you like the little dink?
Yeah, he likes the little dink. Little dink. Yeah,
and it was at Wembley, which was nice.
He got an idea with a little dink.
Best player you've ever played against?
Oh, wow. Oh, there's so many great players out there that I've been lucky to play against.
I've got money on one guy.
Who?
You played with him in Ireland as well.
Big Paul?
Yeah.
Big Paul was balling. He's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant with Paul. When you look at what Paul went through over the years, he couldn't play because he had this frozen shoulder, he had knee problems. He was awesome, wasn't he?
Well, I mean, we're talking about Paul McGrath. It's just when I talk to the Irish players from that era, they talk about Paul McGrath as somebody almost superhuman. And that's why I thought, and I go, wow, I played against him.
Yeah.
Club level, international level. Show. And I thought he was a really good player. But
yeah, he was
they
tough.
Just see something that we, you know,
it was really like Brazy and Maldini. They were like something else, you know. I mean, I played against some great strikers. Let's not forget, you know. Yeah, do you know what? Yeah, Big Paul's a great shout. I'll go with that. Yeah,
you like this one to finish off. Who's the greatest Scouse footballer of all time?
It's got to be Stevie G, hasn't it? Has to be Stevie G. We've had so many fantastic Scousers that I've been lucky to watch play for Liverpool. I'm very proud of being one of them as well. You know what I mean, Cali.
You can mention yourself, John, if you want.
Cali, Robbie, you know, there's been so many, you know, Cara, you know. But you know, for what Steve did for the club, and I actually think he's the best player that's ever played for the club.
Well, it's been great spending time with you as ever.
You're great to be on the show, yeah. I've seen Al Jan for these, my mate, yeah. Good to see you.
It's good to see you, John. Yeah, terrific. I'm absolutely convinced that people will enjoy it. It's a lot of things that I think people have never heard before.
Cheers, mate. Cheers, pal.
Thanks for listening to today's show. We'll be back again in a couple of weeks. In the meantime, make sure you spread the word, give us a follow, or leave a comment wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, there's a host of previous episodes for you to go back over and enjoy before we return. We hope to see you next time. Bye-bye.